I got drunk last night, I got drunk the night before. I'm gonna get drunk tonight if I never get drunk anymore. Oh, we don't want no more of your army. Gee, but I would like to...
Graham Seal and Rob Willis here again with another episode of Yarns of Oz. This time we're going to bring you a few Dinky Die soldier songs from the Boer War to Vietnam. You're probably wondering why we're stopping at Vietnam. It seems that soldiers no longer make up rude rhymes about officers or funny songs to ease the tension. Or maybe they do, but we just haven't heard them. But never mind, we've got plenty of old ones for you today.
Graham, for as long as there's been conflict, I suppose there's been songs of soldiers.
Yeah, it's one of those things that observers have noted for almost forever. Soldiers singing going into battle, soldiers singing before battle, soldiers singing after battle, and soldiers just singing, usually to, while the time away, perhaps to criticise the way things are, and generally have a laugh, I guess, about the situation.
There's some wonderful songs about the American Civil War that have come through, and they're just carried through, and that fervour, that patriotism that's there, but also the Aussies are very, very good at taking the mickey out of people, aren't they, particularly officers?
That's a theme that comes through very strongly in all soldier songs, yes. It's an opportunity to whinge and grouse and complain about the situation. So soldiers are famous for complaining, of course, as well as for singing. But in the Australian stuff, it seems that the anti-authoritarianism there is a very strong thread.
Well, over the years, we've been recording songs of the soldiers for the National Library Oral History and Folklore Collection. And, of course, you've been researching and doing this yourself for more years than you care to remember, probably.
Far too many.
They can be very maudlin, but many show that what we were talking about, the Australian soldiers' lack of respect for discipline and the joy of taking the mickey out of otherwise serious circumstances. Our first song that we listened to there, which was the Army song done by Bill Case, who was an Army cook. Now, he was one of the funniest men I've ever met, and even though the song talks about getting out of the Army, Bill, like many others, was proud of the time that he did spend in the military.
Yes, I wonder what he did to them, because the tradition of Army cooks, they're all dreadful, and it's one of the complaints that turns up time and time again in soldier songs, just as it did before, of course, in the bush in Australia. Bush cooks were generally thought to be the worst kind of hash slingers and bait layers, they used to be called, babbling brooks, various other kinds of demeaning names. But certainly that tradition continued on into the AIF as well.
I think we could even do another program further down the line on Army cooks and shearers, cooks and cooks in general.
Yeah, who called the cook a bastard?
That's the one, they called the bastard a cook. Let's have a listen to some songs of the soldiers that we have recorded over the years. This first one is from the Boer War, and it's interesting, it's from Maisie Tucker. And she learnt the songs from her father, who served both in World War One and in World War Two, and her brother Ron Stanton, who was a prisoner of war in Changi. It's interesting to me that Maisie was the carrier of these songs, and that they would have otherwise been lost if it hadn't been for Maisie learning them from her father. So let's have a listen to an interesting one from the Boer War.
Maisie, how do you think your dad learnt these songs that came from that Boer War era?
Oh.
He was in the First World War.
Yes, he was in the First World War. He probably learned most of them in the First World War because they sang a lot. Those first lot of soldiers sang a lot more than the Second World War soldiers. I don't know. I mean, they were very patriotic. The baby's name is Kitchener Carrington, Matthew and Kakowich White, Conny Kruger, Palmajuga, Gedenkowar and Kalenza Kruger, Cape Town Mafeking French, Kimberley Ladysmith Bobs, Union Jack, Fighting Back, Luddite Victoria, Blogs.
Bit patriotic there, Graham?
I think so. It was certainly the era for patriotism and jingoism of the empire. And the Boer War, of course, was a very nasty war. And you remember the story of Breaker Morant, who was executed along with his companion for shooting unarmed prisoners. And that went on both sides. So the kind of atrocities of that war were quite nasty. And one of the reasons for it was probably because it was heralding in many ways the end of the empire, which was really kind of finished off in World War One anyway. But that comes through, I think, very strongly in these little ditties and all those place names from the Boer War, because people followed it very closely at home, both in Britain, of course, and in Australia.
And that use of place names for babies' names. I can relate to that on a local level, because in Forbes we had a Mr. Mafeking Gunn, who was known as Bull, Dardanelles Walker, and Mr. Lemnos Kelly, and Mr. Thomas Anzac Drain, and apparently they had to get permission to use Anzac as a name.
That's right, yeah, Anzac was very quickly, I suppose, regulated as a name in Australia by legislation, yes, so you would have got permission to do that, and the same as you still have to, if you want to use it on a product like Anzac biscuits or something, that can be a problem as well. Even today.
Let's have a listen to a bit of humour. Another one from the Boer War, and again from Maisie, that she learnt from her dad.
Have I been in battle? Have I been in jail? Did I die for England? Listen to my tale. One Good Friday, Tuesday, down in Timbuktu, I was with my regiment, I was there with me. Me and three more corporals, 'neath the broiling sun, went to view the battle after it was won. 50,000 Frenchmen raised the battle cry, but while the boys were fighting, where, oh, where was I? I was hiding in the ammunition van. Midst the shot and shell I've been, while my comrades fought as comrades ought, I was nowhere to be seen. I was covered over with the flag, listening to the din and strife. When the war was o'er, out once more, and that's how I saved my life.
I wasn't sure whether that one was Boer War, but of course, getting back to the wonderful Trove and the online newspapers, I found an article from the Liverpool Herald, Saturday the 18th of May 1901. Welcome home to Trooper Foulstone. Now, there's a name for you, Trooper Foulstone. Miss Baxter sang Hiding in the Ammunition Van. So there you go. It goes back to the Boer War, apparently.
It's interesting how many of these songs of soldiers and war are inane. Inanity and absurdity seems to be one of the features of them as well.
Let's go to World War One, 1914-1918. And this is another one from a woman, from a Marion Hardy that I recorded in Coonabarabran. And I'd heard fragments of this song. John Meredith had collected it. It's called The Banks of the Murray, and I've never seen it in print, in sheet music or anything like that, and only collected in the oral tradition. The tune is The Road and the Miles to Dundee, and it's a real tearjerker.
In a neat little cottage on the banks of the Murray lived the wife of a soldier with children so poor. Their daddy left home with a gun on his shoulder to fight in the battles in England's great war. The transport sailed out to the scene of the slaughter, when many brave men fell on that grey April morn. And our hero, he fell in the Dardanelles battle, when though mortally wounded and dying, he said, "Give my watch to my mother, my poor darling mother, and send little Daisy my locket and chain. The rest you may give to my poor wife and brother, for God has defied me to see them again." The scene has not changed in that neat little cottage where mother sits nursing a babe newly born, and grey-headed grandmother keeps weeping and wailing for the son she loved dearly will never return. And dear little Daisy keeps asking for Papa and watches each evening outside the front door, till her mother replies, though her poor heart is aching, "Your daddy, my darling, was shot at the war. Give my watch to my mother, my poor darling mother, and send little Daisy my locket and chain. The rest you may give to my poor wife and brother, for God has defied me to see them again."
Well, there you go. What's got me beaten there, Graeme, is that everything else is given away before the wife gets it.
That's right.
Give the rest to my wife and my brother. Isn't that a tearjerker?
Oh, yes, aren't they wonderful? And that's, I guess, part of it as well. I mean, I'm in tears here just listening to it. But you wonder how people kind of reacted to it at the time. You know, I mean, obviously someone wanted to sing that song. It was probably sung in a group, family or whatever it was, or community of some sort. Was everybody sort of weeping at it? Or do you think that they might have taken it with a grain of salt and just sort of dealt with it as a, I guess, just an expression of the situation?
Graeme, there's some songs that have come through a number of conflicts, isn't there, handed down from one generation to another. And I think you've got a good example with Horse Free Road, or Dinky Dyers, it's probably better known.
Yeah, that's right. The one that we started off with there, Mafeking, of course, went through two wars. Well, this one is generally called Horse Ferry Road, or was called Horse Ferry Road in World War One, and as you said, it became Dinky Dye in World War Two. But it also went on to Korea and to Vietnam, so it's probably the only song that's actually survived four wars. The original seems to have been a poem, an Australian and New Zealand poem that related to Horse Ferry Road, which was the head of the AOF headquarters in London. And it went like this. He landed in London and straightaway strode direct to headquarters in Horse Ferry Road. A Bakshi corporal said, "Pardon me, please, but there's dust on your tunic and dirt on your knees. You look so disgraceful that people will laugh," said the cold-footed coward that works on the staff. Well, the Aussie just gave him a murderous glance and said, "I've just come from the trenches in France, where shrapnel is falling and comforts are few, and Aussies are fighting for cowards like you. I wonder, old shirker, if your mother e'er knew that her son is a waster and afraid of the strafe, but holds a soft snap on the Horse Ferry staff."
Mm.
And as I said, that seems to be the origin of it. It's sung sometimes to the mountains of Mourn, and as I said, by World War II, and later it'll become Dinky Die with that catchy chorus.
Ah, yes.
Dinky Die, Dinky Die, I am a Aussie and won't tell a lie. Well, I am a digger and I won't tell a lie.
Yes, and that's one song that has stuck, hasn't it? I think even up to Vietnam.
Definitely, yeah, right through those four wars.
Let's go to World War II. And this one is very, very interesting. It's from Kevin O'Connor of Griffith, who recorded it many, many, many years ago. And, of course, it's in the National Library collection. And it's called 30 Days Leave. Now, it's a song, Kevin will introduce it, but it was made up in New Guinea about the fact the leave that was promised to the troops never eventuated, and then a whole series of circumstances that we can talk about a bit later eventuated. They would have got 30 days leave, but they never did. So let's have a listen to Kevin.
The strength of the song was made up was the fact that we'd been up there so long in the islands, and yet they'd promised everyone that had been up there for 12 months with home, you know. But we'd been up there for 18 months and more, and so this bloke made up the song. And the three main blokes that are mentioned in it, which Ford was the Minister for the Army at one time, and old Tom Blamey, you knew who he was, and Bob Menzies, well, the three of them are brought into it. And this is the way she goes. These last months we've nearly been crazy for the homeland we love and adore. They took all our kits and belongings and sent us to New Guinea shore. We've written to Ford for exemptions. We've all done our 12 months, and yet, although there are plenty of troop ships, these are the answers we get. Just wait till our good friends the Tommies start out on the new front in France. When there isn't a Yank left in Aussie and you don't see a WAF at a dance. Wait till the hard-working miners some coal for our troop ships do cleave. When Bob Menzies joins the commandos, we'll send you on 30 days leave. Just wait till the munition workers have made all their back books look nice. And wait till the nips up at Wee Whack have eaten their last bag of rice. When the AWARs are out of the army and nurses can do as they please. When Joe Stalin shaves off his trademark, we'll send you on 30 days leave. Just wait till you've all had scrub typhus, been down 16 times with the bug. Yes, wait till you've all had that fever and ringworms all over your mug. Wait till the doc says you're troppo and beer by the keg you receive. When Tom Blamey shoulders a Bren gun, we'll send you on 30 days leave.
I just love that song. I think it's one of the best things I've ever recorded.
It's a great song, and he does it so well. Yeah. And those New Guinea songs are great. I collected a lot of stuff from New Guinea, World War II, New Guinea stuff.
There's
they're great songs in the style and of the kind we've been talking about.
Yeah, and I think that actually that was Tex Morton's Beautiful Queensland too, the song.
The tune sounded like it, yeah.
The tune sounded. Was it Milne Bay? There's On the Shores of Milne Bay. I don't think I've ever got it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, I've got that, yeah, a few times. On the shores of Milne Bay. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, that one. Yeah, and there's quite a few different versions of it as well. But that, as I said, that one by that Kevin, the 30 Days Leave, is a beauty.
Yes. When Joe Stalin shaves off his trademark.
Yep.
When Bob Menzies shoulders a Bren gun, they'll send us on 30 Days Leave.
They're all little gems.
They are. Let's have a listen to one from Changi. Again, it's sung to an old Irish song, I think, and this one was handed down to Maisie Tucker, the wonderful Maisie Tucker, by her brother Ron Stanton, who was in Changi, but he didn't remember the song. And here again, Maisie has been the carrier.
If the harbour bridge was spanned across the causeway and all the Fremantle came to Singapore, if Adelaide bells rang out in Booker Teemer and Bondi Beach was lined along the shore, if the River Yarra flowed into the harbour and Rockhampton on this island did appear, we would never want to roam. We would always be at home if we only had Australia over here.
Did he sing these songs to you when he came back?
Oh, yes, yes, he was always singing them.
Yeah.
There's quite a tradition, I think, of singing in the POW camps in Japan, Changi.
Yeah, I collected a lot of material from that too, and a couple of people sent me copies of the song books that they have there and the song sheets that they used to turn out for exactly that purpose, yeah. Obviously, quite a lot of them deal with laments for the loss of homeland, and some of them are funny, others are pretty unfunny, I think, particularly when you know the circumstances in which they were written and performed. And they did a lot of stage musicals as well, a lot of shows, with people dressing up and either stuff they wrote themselves or versions of more popular hit shows of the time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the fella who was a well-known performer in later years who was actually there and who was involved with the Changi Theatre parties and such. Name escapes me.
Not was it book. Slim de Grey?
That's the one. I knew I could rely on you, Graham.
There you go.
Let's have a look between the wars. Now, you've got one here, Goodbye Pucker. I have only a version that I can't sing.
Yeah, well, that's this one's slightly like that, but I think we're all right with it. Well, it's to the tune of Bye Bye Blackbird. Is that the version you're thinking of?
Probably.
We'll see what happens. Do you want me to sing it or I'll just recite it?
I'll leave that to your discretion at this stage of the game.
Pack up all your bags and kit, pack up panniers up to shit. Bye bye, pucker. Stew for breakfast, stew for tea. No more bloody stew for me. Bye bye, pucker. No more climbing over bloody mountains. We'll soon be drinking Fosters out of fountains. No more Blanco, no more brass. You can stick him up your ass, pucker. Bye bye.
Love it. So Pucker Panyal was one of the training camps, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, so it was a long history as an army camp, of course, of all kinds. But, yeah, it was a training camp as well as a place for the Nashos too. The National Servicemen after the war also went to Pucker.
Yeah. I got one that I've recorded from a fellow by the name of Brian McMoore, who was in the Korean and Vietnam conflicts. And this one is on another training area, Kapuka.
Kapuka, Kapuka, a terrible place, but the organisation's a bloody disgrace. At 6 in the morning you're pulled out of bed, and at 6 in the evening you're bloody near dead. Yeah.
That's a good that's a good one. I've got one here too, and Pucker Panyal to the same one.
The same one, yeah.
Almost the same. This one says, this is to the tune of the Isle of Capri. Pucker Panyal, it's a wonderful place. The organisation's a bloody disgrace. There are captains and majors and lieutenants too, with their hands in their pockets and fuck all to do. The majors and colonels, they rave and they shout, they haven't a clue what they're talking about. For all that, they teach us, they might as well be shovelling shit on the Isle of Capri.
It's, again, a good example, I would imagine, of folklore, the way that a song or a tune changes. It's that transition between conflicts and between units even.
Yeah, that's right. And that variation is one of the signal characteristics of folklore. And that's how you know you've got some, really, when you find out different versions of it. And people localise things they get from somewhere and think, oh, I'll just apply that to where I am now and just change the name and away we go.
Yeah, so it's relevant to that particular point of in time.
That's right.
And what's going on. Let's talk about the Korean War. You have managed to get a few songs from the Korean War. I haven't a great deal. Let's have a listen to this one, then we'll compare notes, perhaps.
3 battalion coming over the top, picking up the medals at Tubun Drop. We're moving on to Old Tok Chong. They're getting too close to our listening post, so we're moving on. Ashes to ashes and dust to dust. If the Reds don't get to the Kiwis bust, we're moving on. We're moving on. They're getting too close to our listening post, so I'm moving on.
Now, you got a version of that too, didn't you, Grant?
Yes, I've got that one. I can't remember. I think it was sung by Kiwi too, the one that I heard and at a party, quite a few years ago now, I guess. But this person would have been, that sang it, was not a Korean War vet, who would have been too young, so I don't know where he got it from. But, yeah, it's definitely around, and it's definitely a song that was sung by Korean War participants and soldiers.
You had another one referring to, was it Syngman Rhee?
Yeah, Syngman Rhee. I can't find it right now, but it was just another one of these kind of comments on the Syngman Rhee was the... I think president of the South Korean Republic, and I don't think he was very popular with the soldiers, so it's not very complimentary to him. But yeah, but your basic point, I think, is right. There's not very much around from the Korean War. Maybe that's when perhaps soldiers did stop singing so much. I don't know. But when you get to the Vietnam War, it seems to change again because there's plenty of stuff from Vietnam.
Yeah, but it's interesting as well. In my experience, and probably yours as well, that because the Brits weren't involved in Vietnam, a lot of it came from the American side, and because of that folk boom that was going on there with Kingston Trio, there was a group called the Merry Men who were singing parodies to that sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess so. That's a difference there for sure. And quite a lot of the stuff was based on American music. People could actually hear American music, of course, on battle virtually, because they had portable players of one kind or another, where you could listen to popular music of the day. But also a lot of people, as you say, were playing guitars and would knock out a song that suited what they were doing and where they were.
That particular time.
Christmas in Vietnam's a good one, but we'd rather not be here. And there's many others in the same vein.
One that both of us have come across quite often is Uk Dai Loi, which is the Barmaid's Lament. And we'll explain that probably at the end of it. I'll leave that to you. But let's have a listen to some fella by the name of Graham Seal singing it at a session that he and Rob Willis did at the National Library. And it's there for posterity, Uk Dai Loi.
Uk Dai Loi, cheap Charlie, he now buy me Saigon tea. Saigon tea cost many, many p. Uk Dai Loi, he cheap Charlie. Uk Dai Loi, cheap Charlie, he now give me MPC. MPC cost many, many p. Uk Dai Loi, he cheap Charlie. Uk Dai Loi, cheap Charlie, he now go to bed with me. Bed with me cost many, many p. Uk Dai Loi, he cheap Charlie. Uk Dai Loi, cheap Charlie, make me give him one for free. Mama San go crook at me. Uk Dai Loi, he cheap Charlie. Uk Dai Loi, cheap Charlie, he give baby San to me. Baby San cost many, many p. Uk Dai Loi, he cheap Charlie. Uk Dai Loi, cheap Charlie, he go home across the sea. He leave baby San with me. Uk Dai Loi, he cheap Charlie.
Well done, Graham.
Uk Dai Loi, yes, said to mean big red kangaroo, but probably an Australian man, it seems to be. And, of course, it relates to the situation with the bar girls in Saigon between the troops, which is another thing, as well as singing, of course. Soldiers are well known for other entertainments, and that's what this one's all about.
Yeah, the Saigon tea, which was basically just cold tea that they would serve in place of whiskey or something for the bar girls, wasn't it?
Drink for the bar girls, I think, yes. And Uk Dai Loi, piaster was money. Cheap Charlie, obviously, were being cheap and didn't, apparently, Australian troops didn't spend money as freely as the American troops. So they had a bit of a reputation as being misers amongst the girls.
You were saying that the Vietnam War was probably the last conflict where the traditional folk songs were there.
It's the last conflict where Australia and New Zealanders fought together as one unit, and as they did in the previous World War I, with sort of the Anzac tradition evolved. Don't know if that's got anything to do with it. It's also, as we said, it's the time when all these new forms of technology that give you music 24/7 wherever you are started to become available. And so the kind of wars that we've had since then have got all that technology. They've tended to be smaller wars, I guess, in the sense of not involving perhaps civilians quite so much. But I think, generally speaking, nobody really knows. Of course, no one's really tried to collect them, as far as I know, from soldiers in Afghanistan or Iraq, Iran, or anywhere else that Australian troops or other troops, for that matter, have been.
I have had a yarn to a couple of soldiers who were in those conflicts, and it was the iPhones and earbuds in the ear.
That's right. Yeah, I guess that's the case. And, I mean, you've got Fred Smith, of course,
yes,
who's written many songs about that, or one of the conflicts over there in the Middle East, but was there himself in a diplomatic role, I think. But again, they're songs about soldiers rather than songs by soldiers. So again, you're looking at a different kind of musical expression, I think. Soldier songs, parodies and ditties have all been important in all of Australia's wars up to Vietnam. There's sometimes black humour, irreverence and crudity, as we've heard, have helped soldiers deal with the difficult situations that they encounter. But since the 1970s, it seems that technology, like portable music players, more recently, the internet have maybe killed off song making and singing. So many military songs are based on parodies of music of the day. Perhaps today's songs are too complex for parody, maybe. And do soldiers or sailors or Air Force members still make up and sing their own songs? We'd love to know.
To get a bite to eat. And there I saw the cooks a-mashing potatoes with their feet. So that's why I hate the army. Oh, gee, I would love to go home.
You've been listening to an episode in the Yarns of Oz podcast, written, produced and presented by Rob Willis and Graham Seal. See you later.
Shining on the cookhouse door. Now they give us chicken. They say it is the best. We get the neck and the arsehole, and the officers get the rest. That's why I hate the bloomin' army. And that's the reason I'd like to go back home. All together now, start of the evening. Beautiful evening, stars of the evening, shining on the cookhouse door. Now they build us a toilet out in the open air. The wind blew up our backsides and it tickled us here and there. Now we are finished with the army. One day I would like to go home. The last one now. Stars of the evening. A beautiful evening stars. Stars of the evening. Shining on the cookhouse.